Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to The Sound of London. This is Londonist Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and there's no time to waste because we're heading east, only to head straight back again. This week's episode, completely by accident, is all about tying together some of the places and ideas that we've explored in previous episodes. It's the connective tissue, and it's a lot more besides, and it was a hell of a long recording. You know, there was a lot to say. So this week's episode is an extended one. We could have compressed it, but it felt like it deserved the space. You should probably save it for that tube journey where there's a signal failure and you get stuck in the tunnel so you can at least feel like you're going somewhere. The thing that really struck me about this journey was just how surreal some parts of it were. I mean, really strange. Join me and my guide as we explore the riverbank from the Thames Barrier to Greenwich.
Hey baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sound. You ain't never seen the like before, just a stone's throw from your front door. Hey baby, step out me, see a piece of air, land and sea. Some creep, some saw, down the road, jam brand store.
My heart aches for some fire.
Well, hello, hello, listener. We've done shows, as you'll remember, where we have been in little countryside villages all beamed with oak, looking at vintage buses and vintage steam trains. We've been in rural West London, seemingly completely unconnected with the city. I'm now standing by the river looking at a huge ship unloading its cargo from the Tate and Lyle sugar plant, all of which seem to belong to completely different places, even different times. But it is all still London. What an exciting city it is. In fact, as we're standing here by the river at the Thames Barrier, we're watching one of the refuse barges heading upriver. And of course, we've recorded on one of those as well. If you fancy finding out what that's like, flick back to a previous episode, why don't you? And we're going to be taking a riverside walk. And with me is David Fathers. He's the author and illustrator of the London Thames Path, a guide to the Thames Path from Putney Bridge to the Barrier. David, hi.
Good morning.
I should describe David to you. I know he's an illustrator. He's been doing some sketching while we've been discussing things before the show here. But he looks as though he could comfortably belong on a Harley with a scarf like that.
No, I no longer have a motorbike. I used to.
I thought I detected one there in the mix. We've got an amazing view, and it's not by accident that we've got such a beautiful view here.
It isn't. We are standing here looking west along the Thames. We've got the Thames Barrier in front of us, which is open today. And beyond that, we can see the O2 Arena and Canary Wharf, and then just poking out on the horizon, we can see the Shard.
So what's the plan today, David?
I think we're going to walk.
Oh, we have City Airport.
We do have City Airport. You've got to time this. We're going to walk here from the barrier around the peninsula, around Greenwich Peninsula, or Bugsby Peninsula, as it used to be called.
Is that right?
Bugsby Marshes, to be precise. It used to be just marshland. It was redundant land.
Wait, when did it stop being called Bugsby?
I suspect sometime before the O2 Arena, in a bid to sort of improve the area.
What, Bugsby not cool enough?
No, certainly not cool enough, no. But I think the estate agents would say no. Well, they want Greenwich. They want that cachet of Greenwich.
They know the best, don't they?
Yes.
Do you know what? Normally I say this about the Greenwich Peninsula. You can be standing almost anywhere on the river and have pretty much no idea which way you're pointed because everything's all jumbled up. But actually here from the Thames Barrier, you've got a pretty good idea of what's where, and you can kind of make out the curve of the peninsula heading up towards
your
right.
Yes, you can. You can see there as it curves round to the north, and you can see the dome, and that is the top of the peninsula there. And then we're going to curve. The river flows around the other side.
And we can see the Shard exactly ahead of us.
Yes, indeed. Yes, the ubiquitous Shard.
And something that you don't always see, because the photogenic side of the barrier is the shiny bit around the other side, isn't it, where you've got those curved blades. But from this side, I'm struck by the little viewing cabins that you can see on the back of each of those, reminding me very much of a passenger ferry.
I always think of them as the sentinels now to the City of London. They're guarding the City of London.
I remember visiting this place when I was a wee infant, when the place was just open, which marks my vintage very nicely. And I remember being bored and mindless by the engineering side of things. I shouldn't have been.
No, it's fabulous. It's here to sort of protect about 500 square kilometres of London from flooding. It's only been closed last year, 2015, it closed only a couple of times. But 14, the previous year, it closed about 40 odd times. It was closed because of the, you remember in January 2014 there was a heavy amount of rainfall and some adverse tides, and this was closed for quite a period of time over that month to protect large swathes of London from flooding.
Yeah, now a quick note to teachers. If you're in the business of trying to interest children in a barrier, what you want to do is get them to watch one of those disaster films that shows what would happen if London got flooded.
Yes.
Lots of death and mayhem is what you need.
Be.
And then show them the barrier.
Yes.
This is what's protecting us from that. Don't just show them the barrier sitting there nice and prim in the river.
No, it's also, I would say, it's good to come down here when it actually closes. They do test it from time to time.
What would we see?
We see the barriers which are sitting on the bed of the river at the moment. They're not nothing to do with those silver helmets on the islands. There's this sort of piece of sort of curved concrete which is raised up, and it is quite something to see. There's a huge amount of water that's been held back, and then they slowly release it by lifting the barrier further up even higher, and the water goes underneath.
I see. So each one of these has got a kind of a water wheel without the water wheel.
Yeah, those yellow cranes on the pontoon, they raise it up into position.
Yep. Okay, so we're at the Extravagant View Cafe here, where they're out of paninis, so we have no further business being here. One unnerving thing about this place is that the coffee is served by somebody wearing a uniform that says Environment Agency, and that's not what you want to see when you're getting your coffee. There's something weird about that.
Yeah, cool. Thinking where on earth have they dredged it up from?
The answer may be close to hand. Anyway, we're down to the riverside. Going to swing a left, so we're pointing at London. And you do these walks every now and again, right?
Yeah, I've brought friends down here. I've done a couple of guided tours down here. But what's different today, Quentin, was that we start from this point rather than Greenwich. So what we've got as we're walking, we've got the vista of London, Canary Wharf, the Dome, the Shard in front of us.
So what's your deal then? What's your route into all of this?
I trained as a designer, as a graphic designer, lured into working on web projects and CD-ROM projects in the 90s. But deep down, I was always a frustrated illustrator, and I always wanted to do a book. I tried doing children's books, never got anywhere, just got a pile of rejection slips. And a few years ago, I was out on a bike ride with a friend of mine, and part of it was on the Regent's Canal. And even though I'd lived in London about 30 years, I'd never been down this part of the Regent's Canal. In fact, I don't think I had even been on the Regent's Canal before, to be honest.
You know this isn't the Regent's Canal, do you?
I do know.
Check.
We'll come to the Thames in a minute. During the bike ride, I went looking for some books on the subject, and there was one or two, but they were very text-based and pretty dry. And I thought, there's a book in this. So I put it to one side, and some time later, I think probably a New Year's resolution, I think to recall, I thought, I better get this going and send it off to a publisher. And I got an instant, you know, for more or less an instant reply and said, yeah, it's a great idea, let's do it, which was rather standard.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Anyway, eventually, that was so. I did a book on the Regent's Canal, and it sold pretty well. And they came back to me and said, would you like to do some more? So this is how I got to do the Thames Path.
And it's a neat little number as well, I've got to say.
Thank you.
We should swing your website out into
view. Oh, yes.
Now, I wanted to ask you about this. Is somebody else's name appended to various of your projects?
No.
Yes, what's your website?
My website is Joe Moon.
Yes, who's cool. Joe Moon?
That was one of my characters of my children's books from years ago, and I just decided to keep it. I mean, I could have had davidfathers.co.uk, but I was too modest.
So, Joe, one of your characters is getting all the credit?
Yes, yeah.
We're entering into a walkway here. Now, I was quite interested in this. It's a long concrete brutalist. Oh, no. It's a brutalist structure. And it's a covered walkway, a viewing gallery, I guess, for the barrier itself. Engraved into the wall, though, is a long chart almost life-size, marking off all the tributaries of the river. Now, I wanted to check with you, actually, what are these depth levels?
What it's showing is from the Thames, from Shivering Sands Tower, all the way up to its source. And so, in scale, along here, so we've got Southend-on-Sea, Isle of Grain, Gravesend, Tilbury, and it's showing you all the various docks and features. The QE2 bridge is there.
Northfleet, Hope, St Clement's Reach, Long Reach, Erith Rands, Erith Reach, Halfway Reach, Galleons Reach, Bugsby's Reach.
There we go, Bugsby as in the marshes.
There's some great names there. It reminds me of the shipping forecast that little bit. St Margaret's Reach, Horse Reach. I guess we're in Teddington, Twickenham area.
We've passed London now, haven't we?
We missed London. That's careless.
So here we are. Vauxhall Bridge, Battersea Power Station. So, you know, this stretch here is London.
We're gesturing to a bit that's about 2 metres long.
Yeah.
And then we've still got another 100 feet,
yeah.
150 feet.
Easily 150 feet to the source.
Now, this is either going to be extremely obvious to you, listener, or it's going to come as much a surprise to you as it does to me. But the left side of this chart, which is to say the bit that's furthest out to sea, the line indicating the height of the river is very low. It's barely higher than my ankle. When we get up to the other end, though, the source, it's at head height.
Yes, that's true, but also at Teddington, which I'm trying to find on this wall here, there we go, is Teddington Lock. So up to this point, it's tidal. But by here, there is a lock, and the water is then controlled. So now we begin to sort of rise.
Okay, so we get steps.
Yes.
And each one of those is a lock. Penton Hook Lock, Bell Lock, Magna Carta Island. What a great name.
Well, that's where the Magna Carta was signed.
So that's Runnymede.
In Runnymede, yeah.
We've got Windsor. There's a weir at Windsor. There's Boveney Lock and Weir. Well, this is all very good. You should get yourself down here.
Yes.
But we're down here. What are we going to be exploring on this side of the river?
I think the next thing we're going to see is the Angerstein and Murphy's Wharf, which is this very old 200-year import dock, which is still working, which is unusual for London. You think most of the import trade has gone in terms of shipping, but this is still working. I don't think there's anything in today, but
through a maze of foot tunnels, it make me think of 60s French cinema. No, 70s French cinema.
We're not that far from Thamesmead, where they shot A Clockwork Orange, which is
right.
Similar to this tunnel.
Yeah, that's where it's coming from.
Yes, that's such a nice view there.
That is beautiful, isn't it?
It's not good for radio, but it's just the silver helmets of the...
This is the sort of iconic view of the Thames Barrier, I would say.
Yeah, you'll see this in, you know, many a photograph. This is the Thames Barrier.
Maybe we'll shove a photo up Acast. I want to question this helmets of people guarding, of figures guarding London, though. Does that mean that the rest of them is under the water? Is that how you see it? Is this like a Pacific,
yes, they
Pacific
are like
Rim type
that,
deal?
That they're just, you're just seeing the head and shoulders of these guards, and they are, you know, 40 foot tall.
I think we've just identified another way to get kids interested in the Thames Barrier.
It's true. Yes.
I couldn't help noticing as I was coming to meet you that as we walk past the fairly industrial bit that we're just coming to here, it looks as though there's some storage yards on the left. Well, they wouldn't be on the right. The river's on the right. Incredible, pervasive smell of soy sauce.
I wonder if there's a brewery or something around here.
I wonder. Can't smell it at the moment. It'll strike you.
Yes. Or perhaps Amoy have a factory here.
When you mentioned that this is an active dock, I was wondering what sort of stuff is coming and going from here. Because, of course, the big news is down at Tilbury, isn't it?
Yes, well, Tilbury took, with its containerisation operation, took all the trade, all the shipping away from the centre of London. So all the docks along here, which we'll see later on, by the late 60s were all redundant. But here, they're still bringing in... It's marine dredged aggregate that they're taking from the North Sea and licensed areas in the North Sea, shipped back in. And on those gantries that we can see just over there, it's hoisted in on conveyor belts, and it's processed, it's graded, so we'll see in a minute. Huge pyramids of different size, cobbles, sand, different grades of sand. And then it's shipped out, mostly by train, because they have their own spur line that goes off to Charlton, or by lorry, and it's used for motorway building, house building, probably some end up in your garden. There's decorative cobbles.
Gravel driveways.
Yeah, gravel driveways.
And there's a very lazy atmosphere here. Well, I guess because there's no ship arriving with its goods.
But I bet, yes, it's lazy. It's fair. Well, I was going to say it's quiet. It's not. It's quiet in terms of number of people walking along here today, but the aircraft on this crane working here and the factories to the side. It's still reminiscent of what it was like 100, 150 years ago, excluding the aircraft, of course. This is still the Thames Path, and there's a sign there that tells you we are still on the Thames Path, but it's a weekday. And to be honest, I mean, I've been out here, you know, numerous times and never see hordes of people. The tourists never get as far as, they never get any further than Tower Bridge. That's it. They never rarely walk. It's only the more determined types that get up here.
Now, it could be argued that that is because it's rather ugly and industrial. And with the exception of the obviously beautiful industrial structure of the barrier itself, perhaps there's not all that much to look at compared, for example, with George and Greenwich.
Yeah, true. But I think somehow there is some beauty in this. I can get something out of this. You know, it doesn't all have to be shiny or Georgian or Victorian or Gothic. You know, there's something in this I could find.
I quite agree with you. And looking at the platform here, this caught my eye earlier. There's a platform that's obviously intended to take account of the changing height of the river. It's a concrete and asphalt platform standing up on stilts. Mm. And there's something War of the Worlds-y about it.
In fact, we can go on to it. I think it's gates are open. Yes, they are. Yes. Oh, no, sorry. No. This is the other side. There's one set of gates. It used to be open. No, I think it's closed.
Well, this access thing is a bit of an issue in other parts of the river. Something that's gradually been overcome simply by getting rid of the industrial component of the riverside.
Yes.
And putting through public walks. So the north bank of the Thames here is pretty much out of bounds, isn't it?
It is at the moment, although I suspect it's, you know, in the next 10 years things will change because sadly, the value of land over there is increasing, and they know that it's over on the north bank, it's industrial warehouses, scrap yards, there's aggregate dumps. But as you can see immediately across the river here, there's some brand new buildings going up, and I think that is going to spread further east and west along the Thames. And possibly part of the planning requirement will be that they open the Thames Path along that stretch. It's happened before in other places west of Greenwich. They've had to open up new parts of the Thames Path.
And that is an enormous amount of construction. Do you happen to know, are these the infamous luxury flats?
I would imagine they are the infamous luxury flats, yes.
I haven't heard of a flat being built now for a couple of years that hasn't got the word luxury in front of it.
True. And the thing about affordable flats, that is a very relative term.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I read just recently that flats up to £450,000 are still considered to be affordable.
That is not affordable, is it?
That's £500,000.
Yeah, yeah. Try getting a mortgage on that when you're earning, you know, £30,000 or £40,000 a year. Hmm? Not a hope in hell.
Try getting a mortgage full stop.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, where are you based?
I'm based in North Finchley.
Is this the sort of place you go to for a bit of peace of mind, or does it hold particular artistic potential, or what is this part of town?
Originally, it was just, I came out here to explore for the book, but now I've discovered, you know, I quite like bringing friends, family down across the Thames, especially to the North Park. Barrier Park is very interesting. I don't suppose this is the sort of place I would bring my mother to on this side.
Depends if your mother's into industrial wharves.
I don't think she is.
An oversight on her part.
I think so, yes.
There's a really interesting one just off to the right here. Well, okay, so we've got some buildings here that are shored up at their foundations by planks of wood, essentially, mm-hmm. to keep the river at bay. And then poking out behind them in a kind of a horseshoe shape is a very dilapidated looking structure, again up on stilts, this time wooden ones. It's got a concrete shed on the top with net curtains, it looks like, from this angle. That can't be right.
No, I can't. Yeah, but it's wonderful though, isn't it? Pieces of timber holding it up.
We've no idea. It's fallen into disuse, yes. One would imagine.
Yeah.
But it's got grass growing on the platform.
Yeah, but it has some quality to it. It's nice, isn't it? If I had more time, I'd come back and draw it.
If I had more time, I'd probably buy that and do
yes,
it up.
Of course, yes.
Is anyone doing that? There are those towers out in the estuary.
Yes,
there?
Yeah.
Must have crossed somebody's mind.
I bet. You probably wouldn't get permission to live there. I bet there's some restriction on building something. And then you wouldn't get it'd probably be difficult getting a mortgage on something that's sitting on rotten wooden stilts.
Or home insurance.
Yeah, I don't think it's a nice idea.
So what are you saying? No, you're saying it's a bad idea. Right? Be frank with me, you don't like the idea.
I'll come and visit you. You get it. I'll come and visit. It'd be wonderful, though, just waking up to the Thames just lapping against the side of your house.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic. Yes, that would be really nice.
Well, you know, there's stranger things going on. If you think southwest London, there are lots of little islands in the river, and yes, they're kind of making that thing work.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it's possible. I just looking at the state of that, it's coming back into view again. It looks so precarious.
Yeah, it is.
I just don't think it's going to work.
Half of the supporting stakes are actually not meeting in the middle. I withdraw my planning application. Past the Hope and Anchor.
I think it's the Anchor and Hope.
Oh, well done.
Past yes, it's the Anchor and Hope. Yes, that's a mistake I made first time. I think I'm featured in the book as the Anchor and Hope. Or the Hope and Anchor, rather. Because that always trips off the tongue, doesn't it?
It does. And what does it mean? That
I
seems to be
know.
A formulation
yes,
you see a lot.
No, I don't honestly know. Answers on a postcard. Please.
Well, we can do better than a postcard.
I know we can.
Listener, it's over to you.
There's a very famous one in Islington that I used to frequent, the Hope and Anchor. Mm. Obviously, it's got nautical connotations, although in Islington, I'm not quite sure why it's got nautical connotations. Mm.
And in the goods yards here, we can see rail tracks still in evidence.
Yeah.
And the street we're heading down at the moment is barbed wire on one side to stop us from getting into, that looks a bit like the Corey place.
I think this is the Corey, yes, it is the Corey offices.
Ah, yes, this is Corey.
Yeah. And they're responsible for quite a lot of the recycling that takes place along the Thames from Wandsworth and from the City of London. They pick up the large containers full of rubbish, take it down to Bexley Heath, I think, and then incinerate it and generate energy from that, electricity from that.
An area here that's all about warehousing and storage and goods yards. Well, you can see that this is where shipping containers probably come in. There's some overhead rails here. You would imagine that some sort of thing comes over and picks off containers off the back of trucks. Over the back there, we can see conveyor belts in the sky.
Well, this is the Angerstein and Murphy's Wharf we were talking about earlier. So here we can see piles of graded aggregate.
Yeah, I had something different in mind when you said piles. I imagined something that you might be able to move with a shovel in a day.
It'd take more than a shovel to move that lot.
You mean piles in the sense that the Alps are piles?
Piles of aggregate, piles of stuff that they've got down from the bottom of the North Sea.
Well, that might explain that salty smell that I was thinking of.
Yes,
sauce.
Yes, it could be. It gets quite pungent further around. If they've been unloading, it's quite wet. A lot of the imported aggregate falls off the conveyor belts from time to time. And you can see it all just gets washed out. You can see, I mean, here, where we're walking, is quite sandy yet. You know, we're nowhere near a beach, and it's all just been blown off here. Hmm. Gets washed off, blown off.
We've got a choice to make here. We can go down Bugsby's Way, if we please.
I think that way goes up to the bus stop, which we don't want. We'll continue along here on the Thames Path, because we're going to go right under the import dock.
How far does the Thames Path extend? We're heading out east, beyond the point that we met it.
Yeah, it's about another 25 miles.
Really?
Yeah, and it goes to Dartford, near the crossing.
Huh. That's a hell of a walk.
It is. I'm planning to do it in a few weeks' time, just to see what's out there.
Are you allowed to walk across the Dartford crossing? Dartford Bridge?
No, you're not. But if you you go on a bike, you can insist that they carry you and your bike on a truck across the for free. Well, I don't know if I'm sure it's free, but don't quote me on that.
You haven't exercised this right.
I haven't yet, but maybe one day I will try it. But apparently they're obliged by law to carry you and your bike across the Dartford crossing.
Well, are you obliged to be popular with them after that?
Probably not, no, they'll probably hate you.
I'm sure they wouldn't. I'm sure they'd do it in very good spirits. We're being loomed over at the moment by a tarmac plant. Great big cylindrical containers. pinch down into a funnel at their base.
Well, this is where the grade is. This is where it's dropped in, whizzed around. As I say, I think when these are running, this make a hell of a din. We wouldn't be able to record this, I think, if they were running today. But they just graded out, and you can see just through there the sand, the gravel, and probably somewhere else further the piles of stone.
Bit of a Martian landscape going on in there. It's quite nice, actually. This is one of the few places where there's industrial stuff going on and they don't build a 10-foot high wall. You can see what's going on. Mm. The barbed wire is not particularly inviting.
But you're not going to pay, there's not that much sand you can take away in your rucksack, is
it? Right, and you're not going to nick one of those silos.
No. You could just create a lot of damage, I think.
Damaging sand is your thing, yeah. I showed that sand.
We're facing the Thames now, and it comes up over our heads. Bits often drop off, but they have put this protector now in the way so we don't get hit by gravel. But what is interesting now, as I find, is this new development that's going up just beyond.
You mean housing over there?
Development, yeah. Frankly, I wouldn't want to live there, overlooking this site, because this site isn't, as far as I know, isn't going anywhere soon. But there you are with a view of the Thames, but you've got the aggregate processing plant in your view very close too.
I wonder what's on the other side.
Of the houses?
Yes, I wonder if you'd prefer a view out the other way.
I prefer a view looking the other way, or least of the Thames.
We can see, of course, that the windows are tiny. I think they've tried to conceal the fact that there's a not very pleasant view.
Yes, I think...
by reducing the size of the windows.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, they're very... yeah, quite small windows. Ahead of us, on the other side of the river, on the north bank, you can see cranes poking up. And what they're marking is the Royal Victoria Dock, which we'll hopefully get to later on. They're not functioning anymore, the cranes. They are purely decorative. And then just beyond that, the white structure with the A-frames, that's the Excel Centre. To the right of that, again on the north bank of the Thames, is the old Spillers warehouse. It's a large 1930s concrete structure which the Luftwaffe have missed.
Now, are we looking at the place there that's on the right of it? There's a white section, is that the one?
There's a white little white building which is a sort of lifting plant which was part of the factory, but I think both the lifting plant and the building beyond, the grey which says Millennium Mills written across the top, I don't know if you can see.
Oh, yes.
You can see that? Yep. That was owned by Spillers and it was used just for packaging dog food. Building, and they're both listed, and I believe that they're going to convert the Millennium Mills into
luxury flats, by any chance?
Well done, yes. You must have been reading the literature.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, it doesn't look very luxurious at the moment, but in a few years' time it will be.
Well, what's the betting that the flats here overlooking the aggregates plant were also luxury flats?
Luxury with a slight discount, I suspect.
Does luxury just mean you've got the luxury of having somewhere to live in London?
I think that's right. I think you're right, yeah. You've got a mortgage, hey?
We can see the Cory barges there. These are the ones that are left to have a think about things while the tugboats go off and do their business elsewhere.
Mm.
And festooned across the river from the Millennium... I still want to call it the Millennium Dome. Across to the other side is the vacuum of taxpayers' money that is the Boris chairlift.
Oh, yes, that's interesting. I think, according to a Freedom of Information request, it has 6 regular paying customers on that. The rest is tourists, as and when they turn up. You know, people who come to the O2 Arena, they can escape off to the north bank of an evening. But it is a folly. I personally can't see it lasting too long.
Well, no, the operating costs must be pretty serious.
Yeah.
I'm sure we know what they are.
Yeah.
All of which could easily bring us to the Garden Bridge, but we'll resist.
Ah, yeah, let's not go there, shall we? We could talk long about that.
What I quite like about this area is there are lots of larger-than-life bits of industrial stuff here, which have long become dilapidated, and they're like carcasses of monsters.
Some of the features there, this sort of support device here, I mean, it looks possibly Victorian.
Reminds you of a railway station, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
It looks as though... so there's a bit of square tubing up the end sticking out over the river there. It looks as though probably that was meant to funnel something into something on a ship, maybe.
Of course, yeah. Yes.
Oh yeah, and we can see. Oh, maybe it's still in use, I suppose.
Well, what we're coming up to here, this building here that's on very large supporting struts and a lot more safer than the building we saw just past the barrier.
I'll take it.
It's the guy. Very nice. This is the Greenwich Yacht Club. So in the midst of all this industrial carnage, we have the Greenwich Yacht Club. Now, at the moment, most of the boats are out of the water because it's not quite the season to be sailing. So we're coming to the boatyard here. But this, I have been past here where there's races going on a Saturday and Sunday. It's quite a hive of activity. So you can see there's some, you know, sort of 30-foot boats around here.
The waterfront is denied us. We're being nudged off around the back of the yacht club.
There we go.
Well, here we are at the gates of the Greenwich Yacht Club.
There's quite a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of boats there, some which look like they've seen better days and may not be going back in the water this season without a good rub down and paint job.
I think the same could be said of me. I'll forgo the paint job.
We'll just stick you straight in the water.
Scrape off a bit of rust.
Get those barnacles off.
Are you a seafaring type?
I do occasionally sail. Not so much into these days, but yes, I have to, mainly around the Solent.
Oh, right, yeah.
A friend of mine has a boat down there. Now, what we're coming to here is the Greenwich Ecology Centre. This was created, opened in 2002. And what they've done is recreate a piece of the marsh that was here originally when it was Bugsby Marshes. And they've got water being pumped up from a well below and just trying to recreate for what it's like a wildlife sanctuary for ducks and birds, the sort of environment that was here 200 years ago before the industrial factories, steelworks, shipyards moved in.
Now we've come here to something that's been constructed on the beach, and it's just down from the bits of rock that mark the edge of the beach onto the footpath, and it looks at first glance like a pyre ready for ignition, but on closer inspection you can see all sorts of objects have been hung upon it. Old flasks, workers' hats, tyres. Looks pretty much like the sort of flotsam and jetsam of the river has been piled up here artistically.
It's been here a while. I've passed this a couple of times and I think people just add to it as they find stuff that gets washed up. So there's a couple of pieces of charred tree stumps that'll probably get added in the next few days. I don't know who works it, but it's interesting.
There'll be a photograph of this popping up on your Acast player any moment now. Well, it's all got very multicoloured off to our left now, just as we come past the westernmost bit of the ecology centre. Somebody with whom the kids' TV show Rainbow has left a lasting impression designed these.
True. But at least here, at Mudlark's Boulevard, they've got views...
Mudlark's Boulevard! Get out of town.
Yeah, they've got views over the... over the ecology centre here and over the Thames.
Well, I must say the view out is much better than the view in. I mean, they're weird buildings.
Yeah, yeah. They don't have to look at it, do they?
No.
No, they sit on their balconies sipping their Pimm's and watching the sun go down, and we've got to look at them.
I think you've got an idea of what sort of people live there.
No, I wouldn't go that. No. You mean because I just said Pimm's?
Yeah, yeah.
So you mean Pimm's. No, I think... well, good luck to them, but I certainly would like to own.
Yes, I detected that.
Yes, I was off. Yeah, I should be gained for that. I would like to live by the Thames, but it's probably never going to happen.
There's a smooth black brick object here. It's about shoulder height. It's built into the towpath at an angle, and it is a sundial. It was presented to English partnerships by the Worshipful Company of Tilers and Bricklayers in the year 2000. A polar sundial.
Can't really see it working today, can we? Because there's no sun. It's a bit overcast.
Well, it's not that overcast. I was hoping for something.
Yeah, what is it? 25 to 2. So it should be. You should see something there, but you can't.
I mean, sundials and England are just a partnership work. That's never going to work.
No.
Well, really, you have to wait until it's actually sunny, as opposed to just light.
Here we go. The sun's coming up now. It's not bad. Yeah. 1:30. 20 to 2. There we go. It's been adjusted as well for summertime.
More construction to our left.
Yes. Platinum Riverside.
Yes. That's the name of the development.
It? Yeah. But the thing is with this, what you notice on the other side is there's very little infrastructure. There's very few shops.
Transport's not great, is it?
Transport is not good. If you haven't got a car, you're relying on the bus because you're not nearer to a tube station. The nearest tube is at North Greenwich or the O2. Yeah, they're sort of built, but without much forethought for... And schools as well. There's no schools in the area. Again, you've got to, kids have got to be transported to the school.
That sounds like a serious oversight.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, it's just... You know, just let's get these things slung up on this, you know, what was once marshy land. Nobody wanted to live on this. You saw throughout the Victorian era developments, housing developments, close to industry in Rotherhide, Bermondsey, and it got as far as Greenwich, and it really stopped at that point. Although there was a lot of industry going on here, people would have walked to work from their homes, either in Charlton or in Greenwich or further. Nobody wanted to live here because it was very low. There was no wall that we see now. It was dank, disease-ridden, and if you houses wouldn't last very long. The interiors would deteriorate. These really are the first inhabitants of this peninsula.
So what's changed then? Is it all about building techniques?
I guess so. Yeah, they will have drained the land. They will have pumped the water out. There'll be facilities for pumping the water out, and so these can stand. And as you say, yes, building techniques have changed. They've drilled down far enough to build these 15, 20 story buildings on top of.
Yes, what are the depth of foundations required for one of these on a bit of marshland?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, they must have got down to something far more solid than just a bit of clay.
You can see the structure in the Olympic Park way over yonder now. You see that?
Oh, the orbit.
The ArcelorMittal orbit.
That's right, yes. Yeah. Have you ever been up it?
I have, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've had a look out from their observation platform.
Yeah. Is it worth it?
No, it's all right. So they've got a sort of a strange hall of mirrors effect going on in the observation gallery.
Yeah.
So actually you're seeing yourself on several of the aspects of the tower, and then you're looking down on the east end of the match factory,
Yes, of course. Yes.
What's the company name I'm looking for?
Bryant & May.
Bryant & May, yes. I think, as with absolutely anywhere in town, if you've got somebody who knows the area and knows the stories and can tell you what each of these places used to be and can fire up your imagination with what was and what might be.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
And it's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah.
What about the top of the Shard, though? I think that's the...
That is fabulous.
Have you been up there?
I have. Yes. Yeah, that was... it was very good. And we managed to time it so we got... A sort of, you know, 3/4 an hour of daylight, and then the sun went down. And then just as the sun was going, you could see all the lights just popping up. And it's like looking down on a model village with all those lights and the train set underneath, which is London Bridge Railway Station. And it's fabulous. I must go back. I'd like to go when it's... Take a chance when you're above the cloud and you will just see the taller buildings of London just poking through. That would be fabulous.
I was watching the window cleaners up there as I was catching my train from London Bridge Station this morning. And they are suspended from an arm that pokes out at right angles. It's like it may even be a robotic arm.
Yeah.
It makes it seem like the building itself is alive.
Yeah.
And it stretches out on an elbow.
Yeah.
And then from that is suspended this incredibly heavy cage that they're sitting in to clean the windows. Clean the windows by hand.
Really? That must be like painting the fourth rail bridge as it used to be. They don't have to paint it anymore, but they used to have to paint it, and once they'd finished, they'd start again.
Well, as you can hear, there's plenty going on in the background. You know what, all this noise in the background makes me think that perhaps I could give your ears a rest, listener, and we could take a lovely, soft, comfortable word from our sponsor. This episode of Londonist Out Loud is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. And actually, we decided to put Squarespace through its paces. We're very proud of the London blog we run, but we thought, what the hell, let's try putting another one together in super quick time. So we got on the case, using Squarespace. It's very easy indeed. There were some beautiful templates to work with. The customer support was second to none. And within just 1 hour, we'd made a fantastic looking blog all about Peckham. Take a look at our post on the subject, see what you think. Squarespace could not be simpler to use. And because you listen to this show, there's a freebie here for you. You can start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code Londonist to get 10% off your first purchase.
Most Londoners, if you go back through their family history, you'll find that, you know, some of them were lightermen, worked the Thames, worked on barges. There's huge barges. I don't see one here. They're not motorised. They're about 30 foot long, made of steel.
Oh, yes, those big brown things that look like they should sink in a moment.
Yeah, and they are not powered at all. They are operated by guys with very long oars, two or three of them. They work with the tides. There's very few of them left now. They have races during the year, during the summer. It's something to see, these massive things. They would have been laden as well. They would have had wood or cotton or gin or whatever was being shipped, and they would be moving it from ships, which, you know, if we were here 150 years ago, the Thames would be chocker with boats that couldn't get into the docks awaiting their turn. So sometimes they would be just unloaded in the Thames on these lighter boats and manually brought to the shore by these guys who would just row.
I don't fancy trying to stop one of those. Riding the boar up the river.
I think they know what they're doing. You know, they would only go with the tide. They'd never try and fight against the tide. No, not a job I'd like to try. No.
Well, we're just coming up for the cable car now.
Can you see anybody on it? I mean, sometimes you see there's an empty one, that's an empty one.
I should feel more indignant than I do.
Yeah, it's just a folly. It's just a waste. I think it was built for the Olympic Games in 2012. It served its function then, but it's not instantly disposable. You can't just take it away and sell it to the French Alps.
Ironically, given that we were able to sell everything else to overseas investors.
Yeah, that's true. We could try and sell this off, I suspect.
I mean, we're being a bit miserable, aren't we? It's a bit of fun.
Yeah, it is fun. I've never been on it, you see, so I can't. I shouldn't say. But look, you see, what I'm saying is, on the North Shore there, as you're going over, what are you crossing? It's refuse yards, there's aggregate plants, there's a skip hire centre. It's not pretty.
Doesn't really show off London to best advantage to the visitor, does it?
No.
Now, off to our left, you know, the architect of the buildings that we're looking at now clearly had Mondrian in mind.
Mondrian without the colour, without those primary splashes, but certainly you're right.
Yeah, kind of a monochrome Mondrian.
Yeah.
The one to the right there.
Yes.
That looks like some curtains got mixed up with a sort of a fish tank design.
Yeah, I kind of see it looking like shutters on an old camera.
It does, doesn't it?
That they could close in and out. I think there is a building in Paris that actually does that, and it's an Islamic centre. So I always think it is a sort of Islamic design building. There's no, you know, there's no, it's ornate, it's very ornate, but there's no definable image in there, just geometric shapes.
Imagine if you were of a paranoid disposition and you walked past a building that looked like 1,000 cameras.
Oh yes, you'd be spooked. Yes.
Well, this is one of the loveliest parts of the walk so far. On one hand we have the hoarding of the building site, towering over us, yellow and red cranes, and to our right, 8-foot blue fencing stopping us from getting onto the ferry without a ticket. I wouldn't fancy this as my daily commute.
No. Well, it's nice though, commuting on the
river. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
But to come off here, no. I think this station really here is just for visitors to the O2 Centre. So they're coming for see a concert or an exhibition. What we got there on the North Shore is the point where the River Lee enters the Thames. And it's quite, how should I say, unaffected. It's not, for one thing, the River Lee was never culverted like most central London rivers, built over, went subterranean. And here it just meanders. We'll get a better idea when we get over on the other side of how it meanders. And this is how rivers such as the Fleet and the Warbrook would have entered the Thames. It's tidal, and you've got that the light ship, the red ship there. It's now a recording studio, but it's kind of as Thames as it used to be, the London, you know, central London Thames as it would have appeared, with, you know, decaying banks long before Basil Jett and his friends got to grips with beautifying the Thames back in the 1860s and 70s. It's almost, I mean, if you ignore all the debris, it's quite, I'm going to say, idyllic.
Of course, it wouldn't have been there. You'd have had all sorts of filth in the Thames and carcasses and gunk. And
yeah, this is the cleanest it's been for several hundred years, and I think once they get the Thames Tideway Tunnel finished, it'll be even cleaner. You'll be able to, you know, swim in it.
Yeah, what do we know about that? There was lots of talk on the show a couple of years ago, and we've heard precious little since then.
Well, it's happening. It's got you got the go-ahead last year.
Has ground been broken?
Yes, I believe so, yeah. You know, I mean, it's very controversial if you're living there close to one of these portals that they've created where they're going to dig down and be working, you know, I won't say they're working around the clock, but you're going to have trucks coming in during the day, taking debris away, bringing raw materials in. It's not going to be pleasant, but you know, London needs it because the Basil Jett sewerage system, which was designed for 4 million people, and here we are with nearly, you know, nudging up 8, 9, 10 million people, is overloaded. And consequently, whenever there's a heavy downfall of rain, the system is overloaded and sewage has to go straight into the Thames, and there's nothing else they can do about it. And what they want to do with the Thames Tideway Tunnel is eliminate that completely with this big tunnel that's going to go underneath the Thames and will carry all the sewage away to the processing plants just further to our...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
East.
I think the people objecting to the project should be the people at the other end of this tunnel. Because that's a lot of poo that's going to be arriving on their doorstep.
It is.
Not on their doorstep.
No, no. But I know it's hard if you're living there and in the next few years your life's going to be sort of made a misery because of the work that's going on. But, you know.
Well, it's one of those ones, you know, when you go somewhere that you're not familiar with and your nose detects that you're downwind of the local sewage treatment works.
Yes, yeah.
So anybody who's got the...
They're not going to... No, it's the sewage plants, I believe, are still going to be the same existing sewage plants across Ness.
So they'll be working overtime?
They'll be working over. They'll probably improve the size of them. They're well to the east of London. What I'm talking about is the points where they're building the tunnel and they've got to bring the materials in to start digging. So they're bringing concrete in, they're taking refuse out. Now apparently they are going to start taking a lot of the spoil away by boat, which is a good thing. Use the river.
We're right next to the O2 now.
Yeah. Now this was created for the Millennium Exhibition 2000 and has since been sold off to, it's now the O2 Arena. And there's an interesting feature at the top. You can actually walk to the top of the dome. About £30 I think it costs to walk. It's more expensive than going up the Shard. And I don't quite get it. I think I'd rather go up the Shard any time than walk. There's no lift up this. We'll see it in a minute. I think we'll get further around. You'll be able to see people who spent their £30 to get up there.
Well, two objections. Firstly, it's not that elevated a vantage point from which to survey the Thames. Secondly, if you want to get up high and see this part of town, then you've got the cable car right there.
Which is a lot cheaper. Yes, absolutely. But there's there was an opportunity there to make some few quid for the O2 promoters. So why not?
I'm not proud. I might open up my shed for the same experience. Stick a step ladder next to it.
Yeah, yeah, I could open my loft, knock a few tiles out.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Periscope up through the chimney.
Yeah, tenor a pop. What we've got here is the opening to the former East India dock. It's quite a small one. This dock opened in 1802.
This is on the north bank.
I'm looking at the north bank. There's a couple of lock gates which are permanently closed now, but this is where, as we get a bit closer, you'll be able to see it's not a very wide crossing. It's only about 20, 25 foot across. So you can imagine the boats that were coming in were wooden ships, and they were taken into an inner court area, and then we'd be processed, and they'd go to... And where all those buildings are, those high-rise offices, apartments, was where the East India Dock was completely now been filled in. It's in the same way that Canary Wharf is largely. Although, with that, there is no water in there. This is the only piece of water that's left that they've just built over the old dock.
I rather like that feeling of... And you get the same feeling, actually, by road when you come up from Dover.
Yeah.
And you, I think it's just before you get to the Rotherhithe Tunnel, the first moment that you glimpse the shimmering lights of the city. And the same sort of feeling must have been felt by people arriving on ship.
I suppose so,
and starting to see this, you know, coming around this bend and starting to see the built up area. There's the place you're getting to, there's your destination.
It'd have been a lot darker if they were approaching at night, though. No, it would have been just so little light because, you know, what light was would have been just oil lamps.
Fantastic. Very atmospheric.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what they were thinking. Oh, this is atmospheric. so atmospheric, we've just run aground.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure they used pilots to bring them in, and I suspect they never travelled at night. I'm sure they just moored further down the Thames and waited till the sun came up and then ventured onwards.
So shipping would have been not only tidal, and therefore the different jobs, the time of day at which they could do them would vary because of the bridge heights and all of that stuff, but also seasonal.
Yes, yeah, of course, like, shorter days during the winter, there would be less time to do any manoeuvring. I said earlier, a lot of boats were just left out on the Thames here. 150, 200 years ago, this river would have been chock with boats just moored up along the middle, just waiting to get in to the docks.
Do you happen to know what people would do while they were waiting?
Probably whittle.
Oh, whittling, yes.
Yes, sailors would whittle, I imagine.
Renowned whittlers.
Yes. They'd probably go ashore and, you know, drink themselves into a stupor. They've been at sea. Maybe they've come from, the Caribbean or India, China. So they'll be desperate for some shore leave, I should say.
They should probably have made that gap a bit wider then.
They should. But, you know, they were narrow, but, you know, there were small boats. These were wooden-built ships. These weren't oil tankers and container vessels that we're used to today. And that's the problem. That's why everything moved further east towards Tilbury, as the boats just got bigger and bigger. These just couldn't cope. That became quite obsolete a long time ago. It was then the Royal Docks were established in the 1850s and 60s to take larger and larger, and then metal hulled ships were getting in.
Well, because you can see, as we're walking here, we're around in the top of the peninsula, and we can see that the sandbanks extend out probably a third of the way into the river.
Mm-hmm.
Not ideal for a ship with a big draft.
No. Although they may have dredged it then. You know, now that there's less... there's not big vessels coming up and down the Thames now, so probably won't bother dredging this, because this is a slack point on this peninsula here, on the south side. Sand just gets deposited. Fastest flowing water is on the far side, so that's always a deep channel they'll keep over there. Entrance there too, as you can see, advertised Blackwall Yard. Again, a small entrance. Built for the West India Dock, which was built about 4 years before East India Dock. So about the turn of the 19th century, there was a huge amount of work going on around here. And that was another wharf that had been created purely for trading with the West Indies. Now, controversial thing about that, of course, the money found to build that dock was through slavery. That triangular trade between here, Africa, the West Indies, and that rotation of taking captured slaves from Africa over to the West Indies to work on plantations, and the produce brought back to here. So that dock has a rather tainted history.
Is that reflected or memorialised in any way over there?
I'm not sure. It should be. There may be a memorial in there somewhere. I've never seen one.
As we've rounded the curve now of the top of the peninsula, we can see the Barclays building, the HSBC, Citibank, and the big pointy one.
Always remind you, when you're walking in there, it's like a little bit of mini Manhattan. Mm. And it's all so new and clean and marble-lined and grid-like.
So I was reading your Londonist article very recently about a pumping station.
We will see that very building just as we get further around this corner. We'll talk about that, I think, when we get to it, because it is a very interesting building.
Now, somebody's left out. Now, I've seen this from the other shore.
This is good.
Somebody's left a bit of their boat behind by accident.
Yeah, well, there's somebody in there as well, you can see. But this is, again, another piece of sculpture. It's called A Slice of Reality. Now, whether this was a ship, it was called Reality, I'm not totally convinced. But what they've done, and it's kind of reminiscent of what used to take place along this stretch of the peninsula, was ship salvaging, breaking. And what they've got here is this piece of ship, complete with its bridge, and they've just sliced it into about a 7, 8, 9 metre length of boat. So it's like a cutaway. It's a bit like one of those eagle cutaway illustrations. Again, it was created at the time when the Millennium Dome was being built. And
it's
just left here.
Glazed here as well, I see.
Yes. Yeah. And it's used, because I said there's somebody in there at the moment. There we go. I think it's a studio. Yeah.
We look down into the base of it. That's open to the elements. But you know what? I would have thought if you were to glaze that as well.
Yeah.
Little apartment.
I know.
Exactly, I'll take it.
Yes. Man, you would get the tide. You'd be underwater there.
Yep, that's fine.
That would be lovely.
I'm willing to compromise.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. First time I saw you, I think, was from the far shore.
Sorry, I can't come to work today. I'm underwater.
I'm submerged. Now, what we're going to come to here is quite interesting. Is the 0 degree longitude marker just a bit further on? See where that signpost is there? That has about, I think, I can't read it from here. We'll see when we get to it. There's a mark, and we'll be able to see the observatory, the Greenwich Observatory, where it sort of officially comes from. And it cuts across.
Oh, yes, I see. We've got a... Now, a bit of description is in order here. So the thing we're passing is a platform, once again, on those... I tell you what, let me do you a solid. Yes, I've had emails about the whole solid thing. Thank you for your emails telling me how to say do me a solid. I shall say it correctly from this point on. We will do you a solid. We'll post up a picture immediately of the platform that we're passing right now. David is photographing away. But for those of you listening in audio, it is a 20, 25, 30 foot tall platform on stilts, solid looking. Might have been repaired recently. And there's a wide gangway out to it. And both the platform and the gangway are covered in grass. And it looks like it's probably perfectly happy being that way. And into that platform, and with a counterpart on the Thames walkway here at the side of the river, we find...
the marker for the 0 degree longitude, so you can sort of line yourself up here. So we're looking out, we're looking absolutely... due north, but if we turn round, we should be able to...
Can I guess this? Due south?
Due south, but there's a crane in the way, so I can't see. But there is the Greenwich Observatory, which is the marker, officially marking the 0 degree longitude.
Unless you're French, in which case, I strongly disagree.
Parisians tried to get it, didn't they, back in the 19th century. And there's a sign here, which reads here, 24,859... And what that means is that if you were to start walking from here, head north, 24,859 miles later, you'll come back here. You will circumnavigate the globe. You might have to do some swimming, though, as well.
There's a building on the north bank of the Thames that's interesting me. And unless it's an optical illusion, it's kind of chimney-shaped. It looks as though it's cylindrical from this side, but slightly wider, very slightly wider at the base. I don't know anything about that building.
No, me neither. It's very new. As you can see, they're still fitting it out. But it does look like a sort of an elongated cooling tower. Something you might see next to a power station.
That might be a story.
Now, here we've got the entrance to West India Dock, which is slightly wider than the previous ones. Built in 1802, but they will have refurbished it several times to accommodate larger ships. And you can see there's a sort of drawbridge type construction, which is probably very rarely used now. It's owned by the Canal and River Trust people.
And that's where the Museum of London Docklands lives, isn't it?
A bit further along this particular stretch of water, yes, it is. That's right.
We've got the old brown cranes standing to attention.
At least with these cranes here, they haven't been adorned as the ones that are in the Royal Victoria Dock, because they're very polished and clean. These are very rusty and more authentic. Probably couldn't move, they were just completely arthritic with rust. It's a nice reminder of what took place, what used to happen there.
And we find ourselves, surprisingly, on a corner.
Yeah, and just round the corner is this electricity pylon, which has been sort of launched into the earth.
Wow, this is quite something.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It appeared last year, but for what reason, I've no idea. It's at the end of this golf shooting range, but I don't think you're supposed to hit. No, you're not supposed to hit it with your golf balls.
It's not crazy
far.
Golf.
No, it's just, you can see the nets here, and they are just men like to whack balls large distances. Beats me.
Well, the bit of land that the electricity pylon is impaling, javelin fashion, is a bit of scrubland. To the right, there is a road cutting between that and a large gravelled area. There's a lot of nothing going on here. Given the what I presume to be the value of the land around here for development, that's a surprising void.
It is surprisingly quiet. But I'm sure, you know, come back here in 5 years' time and everything will have changed. It looks like it's just been set up for something.
Mm.
I can't imagine that this is going to be left, because it's not pretty, as you say. It just looks like a car park space. A lot of gravel just spread around. They did beautify.
Maybe they've decided now we'll keep that area special for car boots. That's what.
Yeah, in this area.
Well, this is one of the weirdest views I think I remember in London.
Yeah,
I've never seen anything like this.
It is slightly surreal, isn't it?
We've got the O2 there. We can see Greenwich bus station.
Yeah.
Just over the way there. But we're standing next to a chain link fence.
A ventilation shaft for the Blackwall.
Oh yes, ventilation shaft there.
Yeah.
Then there's this big expanse of gravelly nothing, with an upended full-size electricity pylon sticking out of it. And really, there's no structure for about half a mile inland.
It is unusual for London.
Then we've got our river. We've got the river to the right of us and the city there.
Yeah.
Very strange.
As I say, it won't last.
No, definitely not.
And that gas, if I'm not mistaken, that gas, former gas holder, is coming down, sadly. Because that was another of all the sort of quite basic industries that took place on Bugsby Marshes, which is now Greenwich Peninsula. Gas production was one of them. That was a real stink of an industry. Coal would be brought in, burnt to create town gas. And that was a holder for the town gas. But along with that, there was chemical works on this peninsula. There was steel works, boat building. Pretty nasty area, you know, so it's a lot of this, most of it has gone, as we'll see, and it's just been built upon with expensive flats and a golf range, of course.
Must have cost a fortune to clean that ground up.
Yes. Oh, yes. If you've ever been past a site that they're clearing of an old gas works, it stinks, because all the chemicals have leached in well down into the earth. All that soil has to be brought out because it's contaminated. You can't build upon it.
There's a charming building on the north bank of the Thames there. Unmistakably Art Deco.
Yes.
Set up all in white.
It's relatively new. It's not, you know...
Original. Oh, it's not real?
No, it's not. No, it's not original deco. It's, you know, it went up in the 80s when in the development. But it is nice. It is quite a, you know, a relief from the tower blocks behind it. Now, we can begin to see the pumping station, which doesn't look anything like a pumping station.
Now, this is the subject of your article.
Yes, this is the Isle of Dogs pumping station. It's a kind of low, small warehouse with an apex roof, but it has two large columns either side of the portal. And it's in a sort of Memphis style, but the Memphis style is of an Egyptian theme. And there's a reason for that. The architect, a chap called John Outram, when he was designing it, he picked up on themes that Joseph Bazalgette had picked up when he was creating the sewage system and the embankments for the Thames. And if you're familiar with the benches on the Thames, they've got camels and sphinxes cast in metal at the ends of each of these benches. And the reason for this was that there's a phrase which is on a memorial to Joseph Bazalgette next to the Thames near Northumberland Avenue. And there's a phrase in Latin which basically says, "He who placed chains upon the Thames." And this is what effectively Bazalgette did. He canalised the Thames to make it narrower so it would flush out quicker on the tide, because prior to that the Thames in places was 2 to 3 times the width we see today. And so the architect, when he was building this pumping station, thought he would continue with this Egyptian theme, this iconography, and developed it into the building we see across on the North Shore on the Isle of Dogs.
Well, no one can accuse it of fitting in.
No, it's quite lovely. It's quite unusual. You know, you're thinking, you walk past and think, what on earth is that?
Yeah. I had to guess, I would be thinking in the direction of a local sports venue with some ambition.
Yeah.
Maybe a theatre of some kind, but even then.
Yeah. And it's the funny thing about it, and we'll see when we get closer to around the other side, it is quite elaborate. There's quite a lot of expense has gone into the building of it, and yet it's unmanned. It's an automatic station. It just gets serviced. And I should actually talk about why it's there, because the Isle of Dogs is actually below the mean water level, high water mark, and it used to get flooded. And so they've stopped that now by building a wall all the way around it. However, when it rains, of course, it's still prone to flooding on the other side. The land drops. We can be standing on that wall and you say, oh, the land drops away lower. And so when there's a flash flood or prolonged rain, that pumping station kicks in and pumps the water out into the Thames. There's two other pumping stations as well, but it is needed, which is essential.
So we've come to a bit of the Thames that I've only seen from one of those quarry barges before now. Very wide part of the river. And on the north bank of the Thames there, a cluster of ominous, almost Gothic-looking buildings. They look residential. They've got a sandbank that they're huddled around. But there's, I don't know, they seem to be cast in shadow where everything else is in sunlight. Very peculiar effect.
Yeah. The beach is surprisingly popular. Whenever I go past it, there's often kids playing down there. This kind of reminds me back in the 30s by the Tower of London. The council then shipped in a load of sand for kids during the summer to play on the beach, and which is slightly unsettling because the river then really was really unpleasant. It was not a place to you want to put your kids into, but they didn't seem to worry too much about that, and they had a fine time. And that piece of sand there is sort of similar, but the river is a lot cleaner now.
Well, we're saying all this and reassuring ourselves, but we're walking through some of the worst air quality imaginable.
Yes, it is quite stinky around here.
Did you know that 40,000 people a year die prematurely because of poor air quality in this country?
Yes, I am aware, yes.
I feel lucky if we make it to the end of the podcast.
You think one of us might die?
It could be a bloodbath, it could be both of us.
Yeah. Oh, that would please Londonists.
There'd be a long silence, and then a passerby who just happens to be trained in the art of media would have to finish it off for
picks us. The microphone up and finishes the piece off. Yes.
Look at this. There's a field full of golf balls.
Yeah.
Oh, there really is.
Yeah. Yeah, all these white, they're like mushrooms. First glance. And there's a, you can see just further over, there's what I thought it, well, it is a boat upended, but it's got the, looks like it's been made into a duck or a bird. You see its yellow beak.
Oh, yes. This is all a bit surreal around here.
It is, isn't it? There's nobody. Oh, there is a couple of people playing golf, but it's a working day, so
I wonder why they don't go and collect their balls.
I think they have a machine that sort of, probably a robot, comes out and hoovers them up.
I'd like to see that robot.
Yes.
You know, there's that bit in every human male that wants to drive one of those lawnmower tractors.
Yeah, drive on. Yeah.
I want to drive the ball collecting robot.
Yes.
we might have reached a bit of an impasse here. I'm not sure. There are several massive concrete blocks laid across our path.
They need land, I think.
Oh, it looks like we can.
They need, like, tank traps. They do, don't they?
Maybe the golfers are particularly anxious.
It might be that robotic golf collecting car that makes a bid for us, tries to escape.
Construction going on ahead of us.
Yeah, I think this is more aggregate sites.
It's going to be aggregate or luxury flats, then?
It will become luxury flats once it's been aggregate.
Oh, aggregate then luxury flats.
Yes. But as we get further round the bend, Greenwich will begin to reveal itself to us. We can just see one of the domes of the former royal palaces, and I think, can't quite see it yet, the mast of the Cutty Sark will begin to sprout up too. We'll see those. Now I've got a feeling we used to be able to go down here to the right.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to stay by the riverside.
I'm not sure whether they've closed it off.
I don't know what you think, David, but it looks to me like they are building this construction site from Lego.
I think this is just a barrier just to keep us out and stop us with their cranes on a evening when they've gone home.
Oh, you know what? It's because normally they put up wooden hoarding, but on an exposed part of the river like this with high winds, they can't do that. We're not going under there, are we?
Yeah, he squared us through.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that woman on a bike just came through, so I think we're...
Yeah, well, she could get away from him fast.
Be okay. Thanks.
There, we're walking under the digger at the moment that's leaning over from the footpath into the construction site.
I'm kind of surprised they haven't closed it off to pedestrians. Here we go.
Well, if you're into your aggregate, my goodness, you've just hit the mother load.
This is, aggregate spotters, this is the place to be. Yeah. It's not quite as glamorous as the Angostine and Murphy's Wharf, but...
That was glamorous, wasn't it?
That was glamorous in terms, but this is not bad.
This looks compact and effective to
me. Yeah. But it'll be servicing a lot of the building work that's going on around here.
We're looking at lots of, imagine a sort of wood chipping type equipment, that kind of thing with conveyor belts attached.
Yeah.
That's the vibe we're getting here. And then enormous piles of very nicely graded gravel.
There we go. The view now begins to reveal itself. As you can see, the Trafalgar pub, that sort of pale orangey building, and the old royal palace is just beyond.
And of course, there are the four chimneys there of the Greenwich power station.
Yes, it's a sort of part-time power station. It's used by London Transport for the underground network. If the grid fails, this power station cuts in. Used to be coal-fired, now it's oil and gas-fired.
So does that mean that there's somebody in there right now reading the paper waiting for an emergency?
Yeah, and probably smoking a cigarette, although I shouldn't be smoking a cigarette, but you know what I mean, just feet.
Well, I don't think we can be defaming them in that way, quite so readily.
I guess so. Well, again, it may be a bit like the pumping station. It may be an automatic thing. Somebody in another remote spot just throws a switch and the thing fires up, but I imagine it would have to be manned. Yeah,
that'll be one of those jobs where you have to go around with a clipboard and look busy.
Of course.
Yes, I've checked that for the third time today. It's still there.
Tick, yes.
And there'll be some junior there as well. Yeah. Who's getting bussed around needlessly. Have you checked that thing? There could be an emergency anymore. But there hasn't been an emergency for the last 20 years, boss.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know how frequently it is used.
Have you ever seen it working?
No. I've never heard it working, but it might be fairly silent. And of course you don't see steam belching out the chimneys. Now the chimneys have been reduced. They were about a third taller before when it was a coal-fired station. You would know when it was running because you'd see smoke billowing out. But now it's more invisible fumes, so you don't see anything working.
So it can kill you without you noticing.
Exactly. And that gantry at the front of it, that rather industrial, that's where the colliers would come and unload coal. One would imagine they come from Newcastle in the northeast.
I think the drinking game for today's episode would be a shot of whatever you fancy on the word industrial.
Yes. We wouldn't finish this walk, I think.
No.
An aggregate.
I'm not suggesting we should be doing the drinking. Well, there's bits of bird strewn all over the place.
Pigeons strewn around, yes. Now, here's a yard just to our right here that looks like it has something to do with boat salvaging or reclamation. See some winch gear here. It's been probably taken off a boat. But one of the very few that's left now on the Greenwich Peninsula. One thing we haven't talked about is the Blackwall Tunnel.
This is the Blackwall Tunnel?
This is the approach to the Blackwall Tunnel. This portal here, this sort of little castellated sandstone building is the entrance. Although we are about 3/4 of a mile away from the tunnel proper, but this was the original entrance built at the end of the last century, and there used to be a sister structure on the north bank. That got demolished when they decided in the 60s we needed another tunnel. That portal was demolished, but this one still remained, and you can still drive through it today when you're coming northbound on the Blackwall Tunnel.
And what was it originally for? Toll or something?
No, it was just pure indulgence, just decoration. Look, here we are, we can spend this money on, you know, there's not much of a tunnel. You can't see a tunnel, like a bridge, where you can see how wonderful it is or it isn't. With a tunnel, it's invisible. So they spent money just creating this gateway to the north.
Gateway
yeah,
to the north?
Yeah. Well, there was a gateway to the south on the other side before they demolished it. Now, it's interesting, because when they decided they needed another crossing back in the 1880s, there was all sorts of plans put forward. Bridges were proposed, but the problem with a bridge, it would have to be so high to allow masted ships underneath. It was just almost impossible, especially when we're talking about horse-drawn traffic. The ramp would have, you know, started somewhere in south, you know, several miles south of here to get a good run-up. So a tunnel was opted for. And as I say, by the 60s, the single bore tunnel wasn't enough, so they built a second one. And as we know, they still need more crossings in the Thames. There's talk of a Silvertown crossing somewhere between here and the QE bridge, QE2 crossing.
It's very important, because the idea that a motorcyclist breaking down in the tunnel can bring all of East London to a standstill for most of the day as well. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think my favourite aspect to that whole thing is that as you come out of the tunnel, if you're heading south, there's a sign telling you that breaking down in the tunnel without fuel will incur a penalty. But, of course, you only see that sign once you've come out the other side.
A bit late, isn't it? You've got to be very unlucky to run out of fuel in the tunnel.
Do you think if you saw that sign, having broken down without fuel and then come out the other side, you think, oh, if I'd only known.
Yes. Yes. Now, with the other side of the breaker's yard, this sort of dark brown metal structure that we see in front of us is actually, it's like an L-shaped building. Boats are brought onto it and they're floated up. It's like a floating dock and they can be pulled out of the water. This is effectively sunk down. Boat comes in and then they pump all the water out. It floats up with its platform to the side, raises the boat up so it can be repaired or, in this case, probably dismantled.
It looks like a boat itself.
It does. I don't think you go very far on it. But it's all going, it's all being taken away.
We've been wending our way through a narrow channel between fencing and hoarding, respectively. And at the end of it, suddenly, having passed through an industrial wilderness, we are seeing very abruptly stuff that really belongs in Teddington or Surbiton. Nice municipal handrails, willows over the grassy bank. So we've been transported in the space of 5 metres.
Make the most of it, because it's not going to last very long.
Oh, OK.
Yeah. It is an aberration.
Rounding a corner. Oh, yes, it's back to horrible again. Yes.
I like those houses just on the gale on the North Shore. But they do look rather Dutch. Whether there's a reason for that, whether there's a Dutch connection there. That is what we're looking at there, is what used to be, probably less so, called Cubitt Town.
Ah, right. Now, we mentioned Cubitt in a previous podcast, and a Cubitt is buried in West Norwood Cemetery. Now, what is this Cubitt Town named after?
Well, it's named after the builder, Cubitt.
Now, I wonder if this is the same fella.
I don't know. Let me have a look. For once, you've stumped me now, and I will have to check this one.
Have you got a decent reference book you can turn to?
I have got this book in my bag, which is the London Thames Path by David Fathers.
Yeah, I've read that one.
Here we go. Right, next page. This was built by William Cubitt, who was an MP, and was brother of Thomas Cubitt. And Thomas Cubitt, he was responsible for Pimlico. That's the one. Right, so it's his brother.
So the MP, what's an MP doing building an area? Surely the builder should be building.
Yeah, well, he's probably, you know, he was an MP who had other things to do, I would guess.
Are you suggesting that there was in that time an MP with lots of extra spare money around?
I guess there was, yeah.
Who wasn't spending his whole time focusing on his MPing duties?
Probably not, no. I think he was busy aggrandising himself by having a part of London named after him.
You wouldn't make that connection today between property investment and being an MP, would you?
No, not at all, no, no. But I don't, you see, I don't think it is referred to as Cubit Town anymore. I'd like to bet estate agents don't call it Cubit Town. It's Isle of Dogs, it's Island Gardens, but not Cubit Town.
Paradise Peninsula.
Paradise Peninsula. I mean, again, the Isle of...
Shangri-La Town.
Yes, again, the Isle of Dogs, very much like Bugsby Marsh's Greenwich Peninsula. It was marsh, it was below the level of the high water mark, and consequently flooded a lot. Again, until, you know, very recently, until, you know, Cubit arrived, they started building houses there, sort of houses for the workers who were working in the Millwall dock and further north to the West Indies dock.
Well, that's the thing. Despite the fact I've been railing against the luxury housing, and I'm not suggesting for a second we don't need housing that's genuinely affordable, a lot of the manual jobs that were going on in this part of town have evaporated. We're just down to the guy reading the newspaper
exactly,
over there in the part-time power station.
There's very little industry in London per se, in the scale of what, you know, one of the reasons why the docks developed was because of the need to get goods, raw materials in, goods out, and London made so much, manufactured so much, from chemicals to railways to pianos to ceramics.
Didn't have a piano industry.
Yeah, it was a huge piano industry. It was a major form of entertainment. It was the sound system of the Victorian times. There was no, you know, there was no radio, no television, no PlayStation. This is what families did. And there's numerous piano factories, redundant piano factories in London. Now there's it's quite a famous one in Camden Town, a circular building just off Oval Road. But there are lots of, there was, yeah, many, many piano factories in London. And of course they were shipped out to other countries, to the Empire. So there was a, you know, huge need for the Thames, this super highway for getting materials in and finished products out. And bringing finished products in, of course, importing foodstuffs and dyes and cloth.
We're at the point of the trip so far that feels most abandoned.
Yes, it is. We're here, we're sort of getting towards the southern end of the peninsula. And the point we're standing at here, a couple of years back, this was a boat salvaging yard all along here. And it's completely been removed.
Yeah, you're pointing at a gravel beach. You wouldn't know that anything had ever been.
No, you wouldn't. No, and they've taken absolutely everything away. Every last bolt has been removed.
Well, that's very effective salvaging.
It is very, yes, of course, that's what they're good at. I was just curious as to what that structure was inland. That, when I was talking earlier, there's a sort of a metal grid thing, which doesn't look like a building. It looks more like a piece of sculpture. We'll see it maybe when we get past here. But every time I come along here, something new's appeared. I haven't been probably down this footpath now for about 6 months. And the change is phenomenal. These buildings, and you can't miss them because of these many shades of turquoise and orange apartments that are going up.
Yeah, if you want a tasteful turquoise apartment, this is definitely the place to come.
It is. Yeah, you've got multiple shades there. You've got a choice. And some very fine views. I can see that one on the corner there on the right. Oh, yes, you've got a view there over Greenwich.
No aggregate within view.
No. Well, there's the downside to everything, I suppose.
There's a mudlarker down by the shore there. Either that or he's lost his wallet.
Yeah, I suppose he's mudlarking, yes. And you can see that actually there remains of another salvage yard here, with just the runners left, those wood, decaying wooden runners where the ships would have been sat on while the boat was taken apart. Again, all gone, all taken away.
Yeah, I mean, that whole salvage thing must have been a massive phase in the devolution of the Thames as a port.
Yes, yeah, there would have been lots of smaller, you know, the barge types, the unpowered barge type would needed taking apart and recycling, melting, and larger vessels too. Just the smaller ones that plied up and down the Thames, offering various services to the docks.
I'll get strangled if I assert that the Thames is anything less than a fully functioning port, won't I? I'm in this bit of the Thames, of course.
By whom? Who's going to strangle you?
Oh, you know, the stranglers.
Oh, right. Okay. But it isn't, you know, it's not a, you know, it is no longer a fully functional port. There's tourist boats and there's the clipper boats, which is, you know, very commendable, but it's not the, you know, it's not the, you can see photographs taken, you know, late Victorian photographs of the Thames when it was chocker. I wouldn't say you could walk across the Thames on these, but it was, you know, pretty close. There was so much shipping out there.
Something I've never understood about Victorian photography.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came to photographing, for example, the river and the traffic on the river, no problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were photographing an individual, then the person in question had to sit there for about half an hour, yeah, feigning interest.
Yeah. I think, well, the boats...
Did they have to get the boats to... Could everyone just stop?
Yeah, well, you don't see detail, I guess, but, you know, they don't move that much. Or if they did, they would blur. This was another... This magnificent IKEA corridor that we're going through here, this blue-painted corridor, was another salvage yard. But again, it's gone...
Well, it strikes me that we've been spending about half of our time on this walk in corridors.
Mm. Well, it's just development work, you know. We're between, you know, the old industries going and the new apartments arriving. And that's purely what it's waiting on. I'm sure all this land has been snaffled up. It's been cleared. Yes, you can see there all that pile of rubble, which will get graded, cleared. New hoardings gone up over there. So another one of those apartments. So they... Whoever bought there thinking, oh yeah, we've got great views out there over the Thames, will be sadly disappointed in a few years' time when another block goes up.
A rare glimpse of river. And I guess we're beginning to come to a conclusion there, because we're about to set foot, before very long, in Greenwich proper.
Yeah, things will change. I mean, the Greenwich, it was an established village long before this area became heavily industrialised. It had the Royal... Naval College has been here. Before that, those buildings were royal palaces. Apart from that, there was a fishing port as well here. This is a little enclave that's been there, just a little village by the Thames. People rarely ventured out onto the peninsula because it was stinky and unsafe, and it was a perfect place for Dickensian characters to feature in.
Do you know what? I feel like as we take this step, we are... out of the construction zone.
Absolutely right. We've gone off some sort of rough tarmac with sand and scrub land, and now we're on some rather finished adhesive gravel. It's been stuck on a nice green new cycle path. And yes, it all suddenly changes. These apartments are occupied. There's some one or two fine pubs coming up. And if we ignore the power station...
Well, which we should not.
We will talk about that. But yes, you're right. It suddenly changes. The money starts here. We're coming up to some 18th century housing here, and this was the end of Greenwich. This is as far as you've got.
Because all the buildings we're standing outside of right now are conspicuously new.
Yeah.
What would this have been?
This would have been, you know, the beginnings of the marshland.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Might have been some arable, some farming, small amount, but it was because it was so wet you couldn't keep sheep or cows.
Oh, right, yeah, hooved animals.
Hooved
ungulates.
Would sink.
Yes.
And get, you know, diseases of their hooves, so that wasn't possible. So it really was just a dead area, and the only people who moved in were industrial operations, gas production, steel, shipbuilding, chemicals, glass making. Look, we've even got a sign here that says the River Gardens at Royal Greenwich. Of course, it's Royal Greenwich as well, not just Greenwich.
And now we're stepping from the new path that we just described onto cobbles.
Yeah.
Which means we can't afford to live here.
Yes, of course. Far too expensive, these cobbles.
And this is... There's a switcheroo has been done here, because the street that we're in now, whereas before they were all calling themselves Tranquil Meadows and stuff, where they clearly weren't, we're now in the very refined area, and it's called Ballast Quay.
And if you look up, it's the Harbour Master Office. This was where he resided over this stretch of the Thames.
What the harbour master would make of all this. We're outside the Cutty Sark. We're not actually outside the Cutty Sark.
No, this...
But we're outside the Cutty Sark pub.
This is the... Yeah. No, the Cutty Sark is another 3/4 of a mile away.
And I think this is where we're going to draw to a close. We can see the Royal Naval College within a stone's throw, the power station right there. But the temptation afforded us by the pub is too much to bear.
Yes.
I suppose we need to find a way to wrap this up, because the path continues.
It has changed. I think the thing, you know, we just mentioned about that is we could see as we moved from the peninsula the architecture, the surface of the path that we were walking on has all completely changed. It's largely much older. If we just turn around, we're back to the Thames now, we've got the pub, we got some Victorian and even earlier housing. There's the harbour master's office and the power station, and then just beyond that is the old 17th century almshouse. But it has changed, and we are no longer on the peninsula.
I suppose the trouble with the Thames path is that there's, unless we go right to the source, there's no natural place for us to stop. So we sort of have to abruptly apply the brakes. Could I find a more nautical term?
Drop anchor.
We must what? Yeah, drop anchor, yes. Am I really going to do that?
You're going to say it, I'm not. This is your show, not mine.
I'm not going to do it, I refuse.
I think this is a good point, really, outside the Cuttisark pub, for us to drop anchor.
Well, I'm glad you did. You did it suavely, too.
Thank you.
It's borderline acceptable.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to guide us today.
You're welcome. It's been very enjoyable. I always enjoy walking these eastern stretches of the London Thames path. They're always, you know, there's always something new to see. Every time I come along, there's something developed, something's changed, something's gone, something's arrived. Yes.
And what was the excellent reference volume that you were leafing through earlier?
It's the book which I illustrated and wrote, and it's called The London Thames Path. And it's a guide to the London Thames Path from Putney Bridge to the Thames Barrier on both sides. It covers about 40 miles in total. It's published by Francis Lincoln, and it's available from all good bookshops and websites that sell books too. If you want to see more of this book, pages of my book, do visit my website at joemoon.co.uk, or you can follow me at The Tilbury.
Oh, for today, yes. David Fathers, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to David Fathers. Thanks to Bernie Barclay. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. My name, Quentin Wolfe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.